funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, unconstitutional. The Attorney General weighing in on the state's party line ballot system as Andy Kim gets his day in court. Oral arguments today for the lawsuit he filed to end the ballot design.
This watershed moment can't be walked back. The genie is out of the bottle, and voters are ready to reclaim our state and bring back democracy to New Jersey.
Plus, Jersey City Mayor and gubernatorial candidate Steve Fulop is switching his support from Tammy to Andy for the U.S. Senate.
In 18 years of elected office, I've never, ever changed support publicly like this. So I don't take it lightly. I made a mistake.
Also, protecting students. A new poll finds support to keep the gender identity of students confidential as the school culture wars continue.
More New Jerseyans favor keeping kids safe than favor outing kids into unsafe homes. I think that that's the bottom line and the basis for this.
And let the madness begin. Only two teams from New Jersey are going to the big dance. The St. Peter's Peacocks get the chance to fly again. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJ PBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us this Monday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. It's been a bombshell day in New Jersey politics. Just before, a federal judge was scheduled to begin hearing a lawsuit challenging the state's so-called party line, Attorney General Matt Plotkin sent a letter to the court saying the county line system is, quote, unconstitutional. And as first reported by NJ Globe, his office won't defend the controversial ballot structure against the legal challenge. Attorney General Matt Plotkin told the federal judge the line provides an electoral advantage for candidates who bracket and a corresponding disadvantage for candidates who do not. The decision puts him at odds with the governor, whose wife, First Lady Tammy Murphy, is running in the U.S. Senate primary and has significant county party support. A spokesperson for the governor said outside of the context of any campaign, the attorney general should have defended the law. All this as oral arguments on that lawsuit brought by Congressman Andy Kim in his bid for the Senate seat kicked off at a Trenton federal court this morning, where all eyes are watching to see if the court bans the line in time for that June primary. Senior political correspondent David Cruz has the latest.
Abolish the line! Abolish the line!
There was a sense that the walls, or in this case the county lines, were coming down today after a weekend of developments in the U.S. Senate Democratic primary race, including a letter from the Attorney General who called the county lines unconstitutional.
Just yesterday, the state attorney general said what we all know is true, that the line on New Jersey's ballot is unconstitutional. We have the data, we have the facts, we have the people on our side, and we have the momentum. We are so close, but we will not stop until we bring democracy to New Jersey, and we will not stop until we abolish the line.
Finally, everybody is talking about the line. National news. People from other states asking us to explain what's this all about, and then shocked that this is even legal. Well, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, that's right.
New Jersey's Attorney General suggested yesterday he thinks it's not. So let's see what the court will say today. But one thing is sure, this watershed moment can't be walked back. The genie is out of the bottle, and voters are ready to reclaim our state and bring back democracy to New Jersey.
But if you thought the Attorney General's letter was gonna make today's hearing moot, the judge made it clear. I don't even know if I should consider that letter at all, Judge Saeed Karashi told the attorneys. The Attorney General is lobbing his objections from the cheap seats. Despite an opportunity to intervene or file an amicus brief, the Attorney General was mostly quiet about the case until this weekend. The defense agreed and called the letter an insult to the court. The judge said he would give both sides until the end of the week to decide on the merits of the AG's letter. Andy Kim and Professor Julia Sass Rubin were also scheduled to testify today. The judge warned all parties to be mindful of the time. You're not going to get 3 months to depose endless witnesses, he said. And while it's difficult to tell what the judge is thinking by his questions, many observers here felt he was casting a skeptical eye towards defense claims of hardship. The 19 counties named in the suit argued that Kim was trying to manipulate the court system in an effort to disrupt the election. They said changing the ballots would require reprogramming machines and re-educating voters about confusing new ballots, which drew a tart response from the judge, who asked if they'd be, quote, more confusing than the current system.
I do think that he genuinely wants each side to make their best compelling case, and he wants to get, you know, quick and to the point, which is exactly what this is all about. That is why, you know, the case was filed, to get immediate relief in this election. So, you know, from the proceedings that I've heard so far, I think that the judge is really wanting to have both sides really make a case here and get to the facts.
Parties are back in court on Friday for more motions and probably again next week. The judge said he will rule by April 7th whether to order new ballots for the June primary as the campaign continues to intensify. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And in a stunning reversal, Jersey City Mayor and gubernatorial candidate Steve Fulop today pulled his endorsement of Tammy Murphy in the U.S. Senate primary, saying he made a mistake by being among the first to throw his support behind the First Lady. The shakeup comes after another weekend of county conventions where Congressman Andy Kim got the overwhelming backing of Atlantic and Morris County Democrats. But the Camden County Committee vote, that's home to the South Jersey party machine, that was a different story. Members didn't hold a vote, but gathered to ratify party broker George Norcross's support for Murphy, while denying Kim's attempts to attend or speak before the group and blocking another candidate, Patricia Campos Medina, from entering the building entirely. That tactic and Tammy Murphy's refusal to denounce it drew a lot of criticism from others in the Democratic Party and likely tipped the scales for Steve Fulop, who joins me now. Mayor Fulop, thanks for coming on the show. You said on our air just a few days ago with David Cruz that you weren't enamored with Tammy Murphy's campaign. You've been pretty public about that. But what changed over the last couple of days?
Well, look, I think I've been a public and private critic in many ways of the things that have been happening on the campaign. I mean, you look at the conventions, it's been 1 week has been worse than the previous week. Just this last weekend, you saw how they acted at the Camden convention, not letting another candidate in, Tammy benefiting from it. And then when asked even to comment on it, I think anybody could see there was a right and wrong there, and she was unwilling to speak up. And at that point, it was a reflection on, I think, how she'd be as a senator. And I said, it's hard for me to hang in there.
There, of course, you're referring to Patricia Campos Medina, who was not allowed into the Camden County convention, despite being invited by a committee member. But these are practices, correct me if I'm wrong, that have happened over the years. This is not the first time. What's different now, and why is everybody much more quick to call it out?
From my standpoint, you know, while this has maybe been happening over the years, I don't think that there's ever been a competitive convention process in the 18 years that I've been in elected office like this, where people have an opportunity to actually see what the convention process is like and the entitlement that certain people have to the power and influence that they wield. And, you know, you knew that it kind of existed and there were parts of the process that were wrong. But it's been so blatant and kind of overstepping the will of what seems like everyday party activists and voters. And I think it's in our best interest to listen to them. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm also going to point out, in 18 years of elected office, I've never, ever changed support publicly like this. So I don't take it lightly. You know, I made a mistake. It's embarrassing to admit. It's not easy to admit when you make a mistake, but here we are.
You're now backing Andy Kim in his bid, yes. What has he put forward that made you really sure that he's the right candidate?
Look, when I was elected in 2013, the entire New Jersey institution, political institution, was against me. And
you were an anti-establishment guy. That is correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never been entirely embraced by the establishment, even though I've built relationships clearly because it helps Jersey City. I think to the degree that we've seen kind of the blatant machine politics over the last 2-3 months has been to the next level. And, you know, Andy has conveyed that he has the experience, he'd be the better candidate in November. And most importantly, the energy of the party is supporting Andy Kim clearly. And if we're going to keep the seat Democratic in November, you need that energy.
You see it as a better choice for the party as a whole in terms of not allowing that seat to be flipped.
I do. And I think that, you know, if we don't listen to the activists and the base of our party, we're doing it at our own peril. You know, whether it's the Oprah law, whether it's the ELEC transparency that deals with campaign finance last year, there's a steady drumbeat of entitlement, and it's culminated with this convention process.
You've got your own campaign, your gubernatorial campaign that you're running. Are you concerned at all about how this decision may affect that?
No, look, the campaign that I ran in 2013 was outside of the traditional establishment. I've always kind of been comfortable with running in that lane, so it's not going to change what I do going into next year. I'm sure that the party establishment and some of those relationships are, you know, not happy with me today. But at the end of the day, I think I'm making the right decision.
Jersey City Mayor and gubernatorial candidate Steve Phillip, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
A school policy that's been at the center of fiery debates appears to have the backing of most New Jersey residents. A new Rutgers Eagleton poll out today finds a slim majority of adults in the state believe a teacher shouldn't be required by law to share a trans student's identity with their parents if the student doesn't feel safe coming out on their own. The policy, known as 5756, became a flashpoint in the parental rights conflict, with opponents saying it undermines a parent's relationship with their child. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan has the details.
School board culture wars over parents demanding to be told if their child's transgender tend to showcase loud voices and partisan politics on both sides. Now a new Rutgers-Eagleton poll takes a statewide snapshot of how Jersey residents overall see the issue, and a slim majority say teachers should not be required by law to out students to parents if the kids don't feel safe about it.
We see only about 3 in 10 who are on the side of the teacher being compelled to say something to the parents. New Jerseyans certainly recognize that transgender students are facing things like bullying and depression and anxiety and harassment and potentially don't feel safe in their homes.
Poll director Ashley Koenig explains when asked should teachers out trans students who don't feel safe, 54% of those polled said don't tell, 31% said do tell, and 15% weren't sure, with a 2.8% margin for error. Politically, 72% of Democrats said don't tell, as did 48% of independents, but only 34% of Republicans agreed with that.
This poll tells us that, first of all, more New Jerseyans favor keeping kids safe than favor outing kids into unsafe homes. I think that that's the bottom line and the basis for this.
Lauren Albrechts with Garden State Equality. She says a politically charged atmosphere and high-profile cases like the death of trans teen Next Benedict in Oklahoma have sharpened debate over anti-LGBTQ bullying, the parents' rights movement, and school safety. What do polls really show?
So if you phrase the question like, do you think parents' rights should be taken away? Well, no, nobody thinks that parents' rights should be taken away. If you phrase the question like, should we support kids in our school environments to come out in a healthy and safe manner? Well, then, yes, you're going to get a lot more. Well, yes, of course.
She says New Jersey's transgender education guidance policy 5756 remains a flashpoint. It advises schools to keep a student's gender identity change private, even from families. So far, only a handful of districts here have actually repealed or tried to rewrite 5756. Newly elected board members revoked the policy last month at Old Bridge. New board members in Fort Lee may prevail there in efforts to rewrite it at a meeting tonight.
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be very ugly tonight.
School parent Brad Raimondo notes New Jersey's attorney general has sued districts that tried to tweak 5756 but clashed with the state law against discrimination.
Political slogans notwithstanding, keeping this policy in place is in the best interest of the kids and in the best interest of the town, if for no other reason than because repealing and replacing could very easily be inviting a lawsuit.
He expects a raucous hearing fueled by outside lobbyists who've become regulars at such meetings. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
Is it an attempt to eliminate discrimination or discredit criticisms of Israel? Passionate advocates showed up for a hearing on anti-Semitism at the State House today, where lawmakers were supposed to consider adopting a formal state definition of the term. Only the meeting got postponed minutes before it was scheduled to start, and frustrations boiled over about both the lack of access to the committee and the definitions up for consideration. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas was there.
You don't have time for us?
Pull the bill.
A Senate committee hearing scheduled for today was supposed to allow public testimony on a bill that would create a state definition of anti-Semitism. But that portion of the hearing in the State Government, Wagering, Tourism, and Historic Preservation Committee ended before it even began.
My colleagues are in caucuses getting ready for the 11 a.m. voting session. This meeting is temporarily adjourned.
My example. People from hospitals, from offices, from clinics to come here.
This is disrespectful.
One bill would adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA's, definition of anti-Semitism that would make criticism of Israel and Zionism a form of anti-Semitism. Another bill would require that definition of anti-Semitism and one of Islamophobia to be included in the state diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. But none were heard because the senators left to participate in an all-day voting session, leaving these folks furious.
Canceling or suspending the hearing while we're all here waiting to testify is doubly undemocratic.
I was a bit surprised to see a committee hearing happening the morning of a voting session, but I was certainly surprised to see it suddenly adjourned, especially before bills that so many people had come to speak out about, and then saying we'll reconvene after the voting session, no time given.
Surprising even for former Assemblywoman and Trenton insider Sadaf Jaffer, who came to oppose the bills.
I stand against all forms of hate. I also believe in freedom of speech, and I think that all of us should have the right to critique any government, whether it's our government or the Israeli government or any government in the world.
This bill uses definitions that will criminalize speech against the state of Israel, saying that if you call the state of Israel racist, that's illegal and can be criminally charged.
Abdul Basit Abdullah has lost 45 direct family members in Gaza, including his 17-year-old nephew who was shelled to death last week.
I would just have to sit down and watch what's happening to my family without being able to criticize it.
Many from the Jewish community say New Jersey should do more to stop anti-Semitism, but adopting this definition would do nothing to help that cause.
The state should engage in the struggle against anti-Semitism, but you don't do that by actually adopting a definition that its purpose mostly is to protect a state from criticism rather than a people, right, from prejudice, persecution, discrimination.
Stockton University professor Roz Siegel says New Jersey should adopt the Jerusalem Declaration of Anti-Semitism that hundreds of Jewish scholars in Holocaust history have adopted. Even pro-Israel Zionist groups showed up today to oppose these bills.
We actively debate people who consider themselves anti-Zionists, who won't agree with us on a lot of these things. We think that's the proper way for things to happen. As long as people are not threatening, not promoting violence, which we have New Jersey law that covers that kind of thing.
There is a difference between being opposing to Zionism and opposing or being anti-Semitic. Those are two different things. We cannot equate them.
Committee Chair Senator Beach did inform some attendees the hearing would be rescheduled, though no date has been confirmed. In Trenton, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, keeping a 40-year-old transportation fund alive. Both the Senate and Assembly today voted to reauthorize New Jersey's Transportation Trust Fund by increasing the gas tax over the next 5 years and adding a fee on electric vehicles. It's a move that's been fiercely defended by supporters who say the money's needed to ensure statewide infrastructure projects get done. But others have been critical about the lack of transparency in the process. Ted Goldberg reports from Trenton.
The Transportation Trust Fund is a Phil Murphy signature away from continuing for at least 5 more years, bringing with it automatic annual fees for electric vehicle owners and a higher gas tax.
Nobody likes to raise a tax, but it was absolutely needed to protect the safety and health of our citizens.
Those who own electric vehicles do not pay into the Transportation Trust Fund for use of the roadways. And I think all of us have a shared obligation to make sure our roadways are upkept.
This fund has been used to build construction projects statewide, and the Senate vote passed mainly along party lines. State Republicans objected to annual gas tax increases of 2 cents a gallon for 5 years, and the process by which this bill was drafted.
There is no one here saying do nothing. What we're saying is, do it smarter and do it at a lower cost to the taxpayers of New Jersey, who are the most beleaguered taxpayers in the country.
Why are we slamming through this legislation like it was the last day of lame duck? Clearly, this is a policy that needs to be addressed.
The plan passed by the Senate and Assembly will lead to an estimated 10 cent per gallon raise over the next 5 years and new fees for EV owners. A $250 registration fee, which will increase to $290 in 2028. Senator Anthony Bucco says the Republican plan didn't raise the gas tax, while Democrats argued their plan was more financially feasible.
More money in the Transportation Trust Fund, a longer period of time for the program, more roads fixed at the local level. All of these things could have been completed if Republicans had a seat at the table.
If we go ahead with my friends and colleagues' plans on the other side of the aisle, in about 2 to 3 years from now, our entire debt defeasance fund and our surplus will be fully tapped.
Some folks support the bill, but not quite in its entirety.
That is a schizophrenic policy, which is sending the wrong message to drivers. This needs to get fixed.
Environment NJ Director Doug O'Malley says EV owners shouldn't be saddled with new fees, and hopes Governor Murphy will conditionally veto this bill until there are incentives to offset the new charges.
No one is saying that EV drivers shouldn't pay their fair share, but this is a punitive charge which is going to turn away potential EV drivers at the sales desk at car dealerships.
There's been a lot of diligence that have gone in to select this fee amount and make sure that this is appropriate based on what a normal driver would do at the gas pump. So we feel pretty confident that this fee is warranted and also appropriate for everyone who uses the roadways.
Not everybody thinks those fees are appropriate, but they'll be part of the deal with EVs if Governor Murphy signs this bill. Fees are scheduled to go into effect on July 1st and would raise more than $2 billion. In the State House, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
Turning to Wall Street, investors started the week in an upbeat mood. Stocks rebounded after 2 weeks of losses. Here's how the markets closed today.
Support for the Business Report provided by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its ReNew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
And finally, it's time to get ready for the madness. The men's and women's college basketball national championship tournaments kick off this week, and a pair of local schools will try to make a splash. The Princeton women's team is heading to Iowa City for a matchup with West Virginia on Saturday. If they can win that game, the Tigers will likely face Iowa and their superstar, Caitlin Clark. Meanwhile, in the men's tournament, St. Peter's is back, baby. The Peacocks made a surprise run in Atlantic City to clinch the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference's title. They're set to play Tennessee in Charlotte on Thursday, and they're a heavy the underdog. But the last time St. Peter's was in the tournament, the team made a historic run to the Elite Eight. The Seton Hall and Princeton men's teams both barely missed out on the big dance and will instead host first-round games in the National Invitation Tournament on Wednesday night. Seton Hall will take on St. Joseph's, while Princeton will face University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Good luck to all. And that does it for us tonight. But check out the next episode of Off Exit. It's our new podcast that journeys across the state to share unique slice of life stories from New Jerseyans. In this episode, NJ Spotlight News producer and host of the show, Harrison Malkin, introduces us to Teaneck's Kaylin Cardello, a rising jazz star. Cardello is a William Paterson University and Jazz House Kids alumnus. And when not performing in New York City, he plays regularly in the church band in Wayne, New Jersey. You can download Off Exit wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.
NJM Insurance Group has been serving New Jersey businesses for over a century. As part of the Garden State, we help companies keep their vehicles on the road, employees on the job, and projects on track. Working to protect employees from illness and injury, to keep goods and services moving across the state. We're proud to be part of New Jersey. NJM, we've got New Jersey covered.
If you need to see a doctor, RWJ Barnabas Health has two easy ways to do it from anywhere. You can see an urgent care provider 24/7 on any device with our telemed app. Or use our website to book a virtual visit with an RWJ Barnabas Health Medical Group provider or specialist, even as a new patient. You've taken every precaution, and so have we. So don't delay your care any longer. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.